So we have the full event set.
I think there's some echo.
At the moment, we have 31 people logged in. 3 minutes to go.
I'll just connect the audio on my phone.
Yeah.
I don't need that on.
You know, I need to have them all the audio that's coming from that device.
That's fine. I disconnected the audio on my phone, and I turned the volume down very low, and I have the phone on vibrate. I love the raise hand icon. Cool. Do you want me to answer any of the questions? Ask any questions? Do you want to cover all three of them?
I'll do the first question, then let's see how many questions are generated from the on the
okay on the screen
on the screen, yeah. And then if it looks like there's lots of questions generated on the screen, then just look at the screen.
Okay. I would
I'll
like
pass
to.
It to you.
That's fine. I'd be happy to ask the second one. Especially because not all business schools are as welcoming of business and management education research as ours is.
Right.
So.
Okay, let me see here. Okay, so we have in the Q&A. Yeah, it's working right here.
Good.
Okay, good. Thanks.
I
appreciate it.
So, Colin, just say that.
I was on that call with somebody else the other week with another organization, and it collapsed. And it was really embarrassing.
Sure, yeah. Do you know which thing that was? Was that recently?
That was with a private. It wasn't here. It was, they were.
Let me unmute. And
okay, go ahead. You're muted.
Ben?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Just look.
I hear you just fine.
You have some echo here in one voice? Okay, so can you just say hello so we can just make sure that your sound is coming?
Hello, everyone.
All right. Yep, now your sound is wonderful. You see the Q&A window now? As the questions will come, we'll get there. All right, so it's 12:02, and I think we have already 57 participants online. So I think we can start. Hello everyone, I am Eusebius Cuernavaca. I'm the director of the Center for Digital Communications, Commerce, and Culture here at the University of Baltimore. I'm really pleased to be partnering with the Manager Education Development Division of the Academy of Management to be running this very exciting seminar on management education. I'll pass Now to the Dean of the Merrick School of Business, Murray Diehl, to introduce our speaker. Murray?
Well, welcome, and welcome everybody. Thank you very much for everybody participating. Thanks particularly to the Management Education Division of the Academy of Management for sponsoring this. And we do have on the call Miguel Olivas de Lujan from Clarion University of Pennsylvania. He's the chair of the division. Miguel, I think you're going to say some words at the end of this. We'll leave that. I'm joined here at the Merrick School. We're really excited. I have Professor Regina Banto, who might well be known to many of you, key collaborator with Ben on a number of things here, and Lisa Stickney, who is my department head for Department of Management International Business. She's here. Department heads are always with me just to make sure that I get things absolutely right. Okay? That's our job. Personally, it's really, I'm really excited to be able to introduce Ben. Ben and I actually haven't met, but he's been very influential to me. In the 10 years I've been a dean, first at the University of Liverpool in England, and then here at the University of Baltimore, the Merrick School of Business, I have been very involved with online education, and Ben's articles have been very influential in that. I mean, I think it's important that we are going to be engaged in any activities in business education that we do on the basis of a really good, rigorous research. I mean, why not? That's what we are. We're a university. So Ben's articles have been really influential, looking at the key dynamics of learning environments and really different modalities. Now, I'm reinforced by this. The Journal of Management Education actually agrees with me on this. They've just awarded Ben's 2000 article, Virtual Classroom Characteristics of Student Satisfaction with Internet-Based MBA Courses, as their 2018 Lasting Impact Award. And in that award, they recognize that article was one of the starts of sharing the conversation about online learning and its empirical novelty. Ben, as you can see from his biography, well published, been the editor of the Academy of Management Learning and Education, chair of the Management Education Division 2006-2007. He's been six-time Academy of Management Division Best Paper Award winner. University of Wisconsin in Oshkosh, certainly also as a recognizes him as well. He's the John McNaughton Rosenbaum Professor of I think that's an office in Japan, Rosenbaum Professor, which is actually the highest award in the University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh. He's also the first two-time recipient in the University of Wisconsin Systems MBA Consortium for a standing faculty teaching one time, 2017, proving that Ben actually practices what what he actually researches. So it's really a great pleasure for me to welcome. Ben's going to talk about opportunities and challenges for business and management education research. So Ben, over to you. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for the very kind introduction. Yeah. Trying to get the slides moving here. Okay, there it goes. Actually, I'm trying to keep my remarks relatively brief because I'm of the opinion at this point where there kind of need to be more conversations going on around this topic rather than people speaking individually on and on. This touches real quickly on what I'll be talking about, a potential institutional opportunity for why this type of research is particularly warranted now, and how we may use it and leverage it. Some of the initial results of studies that some friends of mine and I have been involved with this, and some of the opportunities and challenges that come as a result of it. Now, the institutional opportunity, I likely don't have to tell anybody that's participating in the webinar that on a number of fronts from a variety of external stakeholders, universities and by extension business schools, have been under increasing attack or pressure to show their value or their contribution to society. And that there have even been some studies that suggest that, well, maybe the college education, college experience doesn't enhance student learning or the outcomes from it as much as we would like. To which I would say, given our situation, why couldn't we be more intentional about showing our value through the means of rigorously assessing and studying our approaches to education and publishing those pieces in a way so that they are deemed as far as peer-reviewed type journals, so that they're not only judged as highly rigorous for our purposes, but that our external community also deems them as worthwhile and worth of attention. And that these sorts of things and this sort of approach could be part of a narrative that we could use to respond to these external stakeholders. And I know that it'll probably come up at some point in the conversation about how educational research is seen in business schools, to which my reaction increasingly is, well, I guess if you want to continue to fight this battle with one or more body parts tied behind your back, well, go ahead and do so. But increasingly, this strikes me as a missed opportunity on our part if we don't do so. I see this kind of as a progression of sorts, and it's very apropos in the introduction that we talked about some of my work in the area. And we'll talk about a little bit later that one of the things that we really need for this to move forward is both in terms of individual scholars and institutions, a larger number of dedicated entities to this type of work. And that with the aim of that, I probably don't have to tell too many people that are listening that educational research certainly influences the practice of the individual instructor. As was said earlier, it certainly has influenced my practice as far as online delivery. Not only my practice, but also how I see online delivery going on in the business school. And as a result of my own research, my thinking was able to evolve to the idea that you don't run all online courses exactly the same way, regardless of subject matter or other factors. And from that, kind of another aspect of it, just to give another example, kind of a good and maybe not as good as hoped as far as this situation. As far as in my own research, we had presented this and had provided such the information and sources and the like to the folks who were administering the program, the online MBA program for the UW-MBA consortium. And they essentially took that information along with others and have managed to build and develop an online MBA program that's certainly one of the envies of the UW system. But also, if you pay attention to entities like US News, a very well-regarded online MBA. Now, by contrast, just looking at our own situation at UW Oshkosh, we recently completed a task force that was looking at how online learning was conducted or has been conducted in the College of Business here at Oshkosh. And one of the things that we found is, well, an instructor here or there may have picked things up from things that I've done. But by and large, that our courses were something of a hodgepodge that were offered here at Oshkosh, and the quality varied widely. That may not have needed to be the case had we used this research to inform our institutional or in the institutional context of the business school practice here at Oshkosh. And I mentioned a couple of articles, well, Lisa Burke Smalley and Barb Rao talking about the research teaching gap. And also, Don Bacon, who is the current editor of the Journal of Marketing Education, and Kim Stewart, recently had a article published in the Journal of Management Education, which generated a fair amount of dialogue, where they make the case of rather than schools trying to develop their own assurance of learning mechanisms, but rather than doing that, to build their assurance of learning protocols based on conclusions from learning and education research. And actually, in a sense, what I'm talking about is that kind of even moving beyond that, so that not only that the schools use learning and education research to address assurance of learning, but also to be generating some of that research themselves through their own work. And that through this, can see where there's the foundation or potential for a narrative to be built of something along the lines of, look how much time we spend studying, developing, and delivering our curriculum. And look how much this research, how much it has actually influenced our practice institutionally. Why would you not want to send, be it your children, your employees, other fill-in-the-blank stakeholder constituents, to a school that places so much emphasis on studying how to develop and deliver their product most effectively? Now, these are things in some ways not new ideas, but that they've caught on, well, to varying degrees, a few places much more than others. And so it kind of raises the question of, well, how might we create mechanisms to help schools be better able to do this? One thing that I've considered, and my friends that I'll talk about here shortly, as far as an external spur, a lot of things people have to say about rankings, for good or for ill, but one of the things, I guess, in a particular difficulty with rankings is that most of them are set up so that a relatively small number of schools get to play. But as I'll talk about shortly, looking at rankings as a mechanism to drive BME research productivity, at the present state of where things are at, this is an opportunity where everybody can play. It's just as far as the institutional, and I'll argue it's more institutional at this point than individual commitment for doing so, but that there's some external mechanism that schools can assess where they're at in the development of this realm relative to other types of schools, and that to be able to show another form of evidence to help support that narrative as far as increased involvement in this type of work. Now, historically, there are, as far as the development of assessing BME productivity, varies widely across a business school. There are some disciplines, accounting, especially economics, certainly also, and marketing to some extent, have extended histories going back 30 years as far as assessing, okay, who are the key scholars in the area? Who are the key institutions in the area? And so while those are very fortunate, and particularly in the realm of accounting education, if you talk to highly productive accounting educational scholars, it generally doesn't take long before they forward you or give you a link to a website that's sponsored by BYU, where they have listings of productivity by institution, by individual scholars, by the various collections of accounting ed journals that they're at. Now, the thing is, while those are very good things to have, and it has certainly played a role, particularly for accounting, to be able to become increasingly legitimized as an area where one spends their career, these have tended to focus on the particular discipline rather than influencing the behavior of the overall institution or business school. Now, on the other hand, there are some disciplines such as management where largely these sorts of infrastructures are essentially non-existent. And so one of the things, Regina Bento at Baltimore and other old friends of mine, Alvin Wong and Charles Fornicherry, and a new friend, economist Carlos Asarda at University of Delaware, and some other earlier career scholars that are now getting involved with us, thinking of Chris Jones, who's on accounting faculty here at Oshkosh, Justin Cochran, an IS faculty at Kennesaw State University. We have been involved in developing a rankings list, both in terms of author and institutional productivity across the business school. Now, I won't torture you by going through all the methods and those sorts of things of how we got to how we're doing. The articles for those were published in 2017, and if you're interested in those, I have some contact information at the end of the presentation that we can get with that. But to touch on those, as far as, well, some of the high points, we found that there are nearly 2,000 schools that are involved in this type of research in some capacity. One of the things in particular that jumped out to us was that oftentimes BME research is seen as something that happens at, quote, teaching schools. What we found is that about 60% of the 100 most productive BME research business schools are doctoral level institutions by Carnegie classification, which suggests that the practice of this sort of behavior may be going on much more broadly than we'd like to think. Now, the other side, and this on one hand presents an opportunity and a challenge as well, that indicates the relative lack of penetration of this research across business schools. Essentially, what we found that based on the journal quality rating mechanism that we used in our study to weight the articles, essentially that if a business school only averaged one AMLE article, one issues in accounting education article, and one other article from one of the other journals in the pool over a 10-year period, they would be amongst the 100 most productive BME research schools on the planet. I use all kind of quotes with that because, well, I can speak for myself that certainly it seems like I've had a much more challenging time getting into AMLE after I've been the editor of the journal than I had before I was the editor of the journal. So don't hear me saying that getting into those journals is a walk in the park, because for most of them, if anything, the bar for getting good work into those journals is rising increasingly. We did an initial study of the authors, and we now have a follow-up study that will be presented at this year's Academy of Management meetings in Chicago. And what we found is that, in kind of a surprise to us, that in both studies, 99 scholars have published 5 or more articles over the 10-year period of the study, which you're thinking about, okay, if you average an article every other year in one of these journals, you're amongst the 100 most productive people on the planet in this area. One thing that kind of surprised me, especially since it was a relatively short time period, and it's certainly not had anything as far as the extent to which the initial study may have influenced other people's behavior, is that there's a fair amount of churn in just 3 years. Which on one hand, we found that, well, as far as 1 through 20, those scholars were pretty consistent, whereas most of the churn happened between places 21 and 39. Now, to further the final point on there, one of the things in our study is that we wanted to make sure that each discipline had 2 journals representing that particular discipline. For accounting, we included 3 because there was no clear way to distinguish between whether Journal of Accounting Education or Accounting Education and International Journal should be the second journal. And given some things, and I'll chat on these further later as well, we were fine with Accounting Ed having 3 journals in the pool. But as far as for this point, if you take out the Accounting Ed scholars who published in all 3 Accounting Ed journals, it's more like a fourth of the authors have published in more than 2 journals, which suggests that there may be activity, but a lot of it is occurring within the particular context of the particular disciplines. rather than these scholars talking to each other across disciplinary lines, which is one of the things I'm particularly excited to be able to talk about this today, is it to help spur some of those conversations across disciplines. Now, some of the challenges. Anything, if you're looking at the whole business school, and you have, and if an article every other year will get you into the top 100 on the planet, as for building critical mass and dialogues and things like that, it's pretty clear that we need more people that give more focused attention to this area of study. And question is, well, we found that 80% of the authors in our studies published one article, or were co-authors or a part of one article. Do we focus on those folks? Or do we focus on the 1,300 plus that are published 2 to 4 and see if there might be ways to encourage them to give a little more attention? Or it may be a situation where the aim is to try to draw people who aren't actively involved in the realm at all presently, but to bring those as new scholars into the realm. There's certainly another factor is the acceptance of BME research. Just from what I've seen and observed and talking with other areas, there's certainly disparity between the extent of which this type of work is deemed okay. In the management area, as much as we may groan about legitimacy, we actually have it pretty well, especially considering the lack of infrastructure that we built. Accounting, they often are struggling with this, that relative to other disciplines in the business school, they also have it very well, but they've had to work a lot harder to become legitimized than for the most of us in management schools. In the other area, and this one I'd like to talk about a bit more, as far as in disciplinary research, there's a lot of more emphasis on scholarly impact. And even more so as far as trying to develop ways because of accreditation issues beyond scholarly impact. Whereas historically in BME research, and especially considering that a substantial number, if not the majority, of the top 100 BME scholars got into that top 100 based on their work in the area of developing classroom type exercises, where it's often said, okay, this is for the classroom, and so therefore it doesn't lend itself to citation as well as discipline-based research does. And I don't disagree that we need to find measures of how we can capture the impact of that type of work better, but I would also argue that in some ways we're our own worst enemy in this regard, because how many folks start in the area of getting involved in BME research, and this is not just management but other disciplines, it tends to be something folks get involved with post-tenure, and it's because they have a particular area of their teaching that they then go about writing around and writing and developing that, and then build on that way based from their individual experience, which if you think about it, is almost the exact opposite of how we go about doing disciplinary research. One area, just looking in particular, and I'll draw to the next point first, that review of the literature, accounting being a notable exception, one of the things that they've developed a culture of literature review in the accounting ed community. It used to be, and this has gone back all the way back into the 80s, I believe, at least, well, certainly this century, where, and it started every 3 years, that the Journal of Accounting Education would publish a piece by Barbara Apostolou and colleagues, where they would assess, well, essentially review the works of the previous time period of the primary accounting education journals. And now the volume of work in accounting ed has gotten to the point where they're now publishing this article annually, and that they're now looking at, I think it's at least 6 accounting ed journals of where they look at, where unless you look at things such, I know the Journal of Marketing Education has done occasional invited review pieces, but outside of those, we don't have very much of a culture of of reviewing prior literature or developing review pieces to help us inform our other work, of which one of the ways where this could come out clearly as far as an area of immediate impact is a scholarship of classroom exercises, as far as looking at how we do this. Now, another issue is we also don't see a whole lot of conceptual pieces. And this is part of this is what I see it as far as a double-edged sword, one of which is what I call the portability of theory and methods from our respective disciplines to do educational research. Now, those of us in management and marketing and IS are at a relative advantage in this area because I know from the perspective of the management discipline, there has been conversation about the classroom as a form of organization that has gone on for over 35 years. And so drawing ideas from management and organizational behavior to frame perspectives on educational research would not be that uncommon. Where on the other hand, try doing that type of thing with accounting or finance, and maybe to a lesser extent economics. And it's one of the things why I am particularly high on accounting ed research, because from what they have to draw from, as far as its helpfulness for doing educational research, in my opinion, they have very much overperformed. Now, on the other side of this conceptual piece is, okay, if you don't have the theory and method from your discipline, well, where might you go? That would be from educational research. Now, most of us who are in business schools do not have backgrounds in ed schools and, by definition, educational research. So trying to take that on is, in some ways, essentially you're taking on trying to get a whole other graduate degree to be able to do this. So how do we get out of this situation? One thing I can see is an opportunity for us to engage our community of practitioners and using frameworks that they've developed to help us develop exercises. This is an example from the Society of Human Resources Management, where they've identified human resources content areas. And I know there are other areas as far as content, subject matter, and business disciplines for which this could be applied. It could seem like there would be an opportunity for one to take a look at these 13 content areas and look at, okay, what are classroom exercises that have been developed or not in these particular areas, and to be able to report those to others and convey that information. Or also just looking at educational research generally from such criteria. And so that this way, not only does it give a framework from which one could develop review pieces, it also helps to build a link, a stronger link to the practitioner community so that they could be involved with us as well on this. Now, some other things as far as opportunities. As I've mentioned, in terms of institutional barriers, if you're looking at 3 or 4 articles a year gets you into the top 100 presently, that's a relatively low entry barrier. Now, one of the things about that is that, well, once things become transparent, they tend to take a life on their own. So it will be interesting to see how long the barriers continue to be that low. Now, these other areas, as far as, well, I can draw it in a relationship in terms of using the example of our 2005 to 2014 study of authors. The most productive author, BME author on the planet during that period is Fred Phillips, an accounting faculty at the University of Saskatchewan. And if you happen to see the February 2018 issue of the Journal of Management Education, he is actually a co-author of one of the articles in that journal, which suggests the type of thing that we may have been starting to see some things happen as far as scholars from varying disciplines starting to appear in other disciplines' journals, which to get this going is probably going to happen to be one of the things that happened. And this intrigued me. And so I decided to reach out to Fred to see if his interest or gauge his interest in this area of work. And what I found from his reply is that Fred is retiring at the end of the semester, and unlike many of us who just don't know when to get off the stage, Fred is exiting clear, free and clear. And that if you look at the, we've done a further in-depth study of the top 100 scholars, and most of them have been in academia for 20 years or more, and which suggests that many of the current leaders in this area are nearing, if not at retirement, which suggests that there's going to be some opportunity for more people to come into this area. And so with that, that's what I've got kind of to get us going as far as for overall discussion. We can now move to the Q&A portion. Yeah, I got one more slide. Okay. Then I'll roll at the end. Okay, let's see. Some of the Q&A. Okay, we have a question from Avidu asking, I'm a PhD candidate heading for the job market this year doing research in management education of the classroom as organization report. I've been told by some professors in my school not to position myself as a management education researcher because this would not help me on the job market as much as being an OB scholar. Any recommendations you would give to young scholars interested? My first reaction, I actually started BME research when I was kind of a middle assistant professor point in my career. So I didn't come right out, come out of the gate, but started fairly early. One of the things what I found, and just speaking from my experience on this, is that there's something about winning best paper awards that happens to silence counsel about not being a BME scholar. And so I would say, just for myself, that doing it, whatever you're doing, make sure to do it well. And that certainly there are some things as far as, there are certainly benefits as far as being from a disciplinary perspective to help you inform your research. But there's certainly not a reason to not pursue management education research early on in your career. And actually, just from some of the things from the perspective of familiarity with the literature and the like, there actually may be some advantages. I know that it is no longer, back when I got started with this, back in the, would like to answer this question live. We've got a,
just click the button to answer live. Ben, as you said, are you able to see the questions? So we have another question
here. Yes, I can see the question.
Coming from Jeff.
Yes, okay. I'll move to Jeff's question. Asking about, do you think entrepreneurship education is one of the disciplines that is increasingly accepting of BME? Actually, some of the work that we have done in terms of looking at citation behaviors and patterns in BME research would suggest that entrepreneurship education is one of the two primary areas for BME research. What we'd found from our studies is that there are two primary areas, and I guess in the interest of full disclosure, I will mention that Jeff is a co-author and very astute in his knowledge of entrepreneurship education research, and he is a co-author. We are co-authors on a paper that look at citation patterns and behaviors of entrepreneurship research and online teaching and learning research relative to what most would expect to be a highly cited area, but is not. And that in the area of experiential learning, and that certainly based on that there is a definite dedicated pool of scholars studying entrepreneurship education. It sounds as though and seems as though there's plenty that we can ask check from looking at what folks in entrepreneurship education have done. Okay, the next question, James Sulman, is there a robust online community site for BME? Answer to that one is, well, not presently that I'm aware of. My friends and I, that's been something that's been on our thing to do list, and that we'd certainly like to get one, but it's been an issue of time and resources. But certainly welcome it. If someone wants to start one, please do so. Okay, Alvin Wong asking about topical areas of BME interest, kind of an extension of what I talked about as far as BME citation patterns. Probably the four areas that have drawn the most in citation activity are entrepreneurship education and online teaching and learning. The other area, another prominent area, is it pertains to business student ethics, or ethics as it pertains to business schools. And a fourth area, and there are a couple of AMLE articles that most of the audience is probably aware that are kind of the spearheads for this, is the issue of characteristics and critiques of business schools, where that's become something of a cottage industry of stream of itself, where one of the downsides is that for the most part, it appears that if you want to do work in that area, it helps if you are a luminary from the management discipline. Okay, and certainly happy to see if there are other questions related to that. Lourdes White asks, I'm interested in accounting ethics from a teaching and research perspective. Even though the CPA exam requires this topic, there's very limited research on effective teaching of accounting ethics. Any suggestions on how to improve the scholarship of accounting education, accounting ethics education, especially in the online environment? Well, my immediate answer, as far as for what, once you put that caveat of the online environment, would be, first I would say talk to Keith Jones and Clement Chen. Keith is they are both accounting faculty who have studied online and blended environments extensively. And so that would actually probably be my first suggestion as far as where to go from, or who to talk with from that realm. Unfortunately, I could point you to several journals that where you may find some things, but as far as directly to accounting ethics, I don't know if I have the area to speak to that. Okay, Nicole Coomber asking, I've been to very practical workshops at Academy in the past where those who are eminent in the field walked younger faculty, PhD students on how to with publications. Since some of us who might have been the most potential are in the teaching track, could we have something like this, especially with an eye toward developing mentoring relationships? Well, I know that also at Academy meetings, the MAD division has been highly fastidious as far as sponsoring various types of writers' workshops over the past few years. Now, those are kind of a one-off type of situation, so there's not the aspect of the mentoring relationship. But I would say, as far as that goes, probably an initial jumping off point, I would say, is, well, look at our author study appeared in Decision Sciences Journal of Innovative Education in 2017, and look at the authors that come from the management discipline. And then also from the paper in 2017, which there has been a fair amount of churn, particularly in the management area, as far as authors that are in there. And so that could be a ready tool for identifying who might be some folks that may be opportunity to work with going forward. Okay, moving to, let's see, Alana Stoneberger asked, what are the top non-management and business disciplines that publish in BME journals? Well, the way that we look at it is that in our pool of journals, we looked at journals, well, for management, marketing, accounting, finance, economics, operations management. And so look at information systems. I have no notes for getting one, and just caught it at the end. And then each of those fields have their respective journals. And just kind of a rough categorization as far as quality, I know that Curry and Pander, there's an AMLE piece in 2013 that listed and rated these journals. And kind of a hierarchy would be that, well, AMLE and Issues in Accounting Education would be, from a metrics and quality perspective, are kind of the top two. Then from a metrics perspective, the Journal of Education for Business is kind of more of a written to educational practitioners, in a sense, as far as events, certainly from a metrics perspective. Then there is a pool of, well, it might be referred to as the Journal of Insert Discipline Here Education, in that each of the disciplines have one, a Journal of Management Education, Journal of Information Systems Education, Accounting Education, Marketing Education, and Journal of Economic Education, so on. Okay, Olga Rezanova, any ideas on how to get funding on BME research from government bodies? You're not the only one that's trying to figure that out, because I know that that's something that we've been wrestling with as well. Actually, it's one of the things that I know we had a research workshop here at Oshkosh a few weeks back, and where one of the things that came up was that how private funding may be a more viable venue as far as for drawing research funding. I know one of the things that we've been able to benefit from, Carlos Asarta, that I mentioned, is a prominent economics textbook author, and so he's able to get some support from publishers that we have. Long way of saying, we're trying to figure that out just like you. Okay, Kay Simamu here. Do you see a great potential for research and finance and experiential learning? Unfortunately, I don't know as much about the finance literature as I do some of the others. I know that there are some pieces as far as narrative type where finance professors share their experience as far as using various types of techniques. I will say, just from my experience and what I've observed, is that my reaction generally is, God bless people who want to do financial research in finance education, because as far as the legitimation mechanisms that are there for accounting education, at least from what I've seen, just aren't there for finance right now. And so besides the conceptual and methods barriers, there's also some perceptual barriers that folks trying to do that work have to go up against. And for those of us in other areas, the extent that we can help them out, please do so. Lisa Stickney asks, what advice do you have for business schools who want to increase their BME profile and or use their research to influence their educational practice? Well, my first, one of the things is, as we looked at in our study and started talking with people from schools that were ranked relatively well, is that many of them were aware that they were highly ranked in a particular area, such as, the accounting list that I mentioned previously, that's all laid out straightforward. But when we started mentioning that they were highly ranked all across the business school, this, for the most part, this was news to them, with one notable exception.
Okay, Ben, can you hear us now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I'm passing to Mary, because we're 12:47. Mary, you want to?
Yeah, I think we will continue, Ben and the audience, we'll continue with the, there's still some questions and answers, we'll continue that. But in case anyone's got really kind of a tight schedule, I wanted to get one other thing on the agenda just before we we finished and make sure we got it. So I want to pass over to Miguel, who wants actually to make an announcement on behalf of the MED.
The MED.
Okay, thank you. Miguel?
Thank you, Murray. Hi, Ben. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, I have a few words for you, Ben, but I need to start with a parenthesis to thank Dean Murray and our colleagues, Regina Bento, Lisa Stickney, and Eusebio Scornavaca, because without their support and energy, these webinars would have never happened. The MED division of the Academy of Management and myself as its chairperson, we are honored to have such generous colleagues and their institution, the University of Baltimore, as partners. Ben, it is my privilege and my honor as chairperson for the MED division of the Academy of Management to notify you today in this special occasion that you have been selected as the recipient of this year's MED Outstanding Service Award. You might recall that this is a very recent award that our division has.
Oh.
And our division. We just cannot think of an individual more deserving of this award. We want you to be aware of this, and we are aware of your plans to attend the annual meeting in Chicago, so we want to give you just at least one more reason to look forward to the conference. One of the most articulate messages supporting this award in front of the executive committee of the MED division came from Peter McNamara, whom I'm sure you know, a past chairperson of the division. And I'm just going to read a few meaningful sentences here. He stated, "Personally, I very much admire the commitment of Ben to management education research in general and to the division. He has given much to our community, having served in multiple roles, regularly submitting excellent papers, and winning multiple research awards from the division. He is generous with his time, offering excellent development points in his reviews and in the conference sessions. I'm personally aware of it, having served as a program chair as well. I enjoyed those excellent services that you did. And for these contributions alone, we think you are worthy of this award, in addition to making a very profound contribution to the field of MED. Your work has been cited in over 8,800 times. Your contribution as editor, and you are always remaining as a modest in the making multiple contributions across a range of communities like AOM, MOBTS, your own university, and so on. Ben, you're a leader that we in the division respect highly, an inspiration and a mentor to many of us. You will be receiving something in the mail in a few weeks, hopefully days, but we're really looking forward to seeing you in Chicago and giving you the actual award in person. Thank you. Thank you very much for being such a dedicated and inspiring colleague, Ben."
Oh, thank you.
So Ben, you know, congratulations, and I really want, I think we have time to continue this. You know, we make use of your expertise for another 10 minutes. Is that right? And then with this will be recorded. You know, if you want to come back to it, we'll be sending out a link to the recording. Just to make the transition in, since I've got the microphone, can I ask a question that I can't type? You mentioned earlier on about, you know, the need for more dedicated BME scholars and the challenges and opportunities, but if you were a new young scholar, new to BME research, you know, where would you actually start working in this area?
Yeah, actually, kind of this has evolved a bit some over time for me, where I used to say that essentially what I did was take theory and method that I learned from my discipline research and applied it to management education. But now I'd probably say there's a better start of go visit those annual review pieces in the Journal of Accounting Education. And so now, while there's going to be some accounting specific topics that won't be applicable to other disciplines, they spend a lot of time talking about the ways and methods by which research is being done, and also looking at various instructional methods or pedagogies that are employed, which would be definitely applicable across disciplines, to give you an idea of where things are at in the area that you may have interest in. And so that it also gives you the benefit, well, unless you're an accounting educator, of being able to draw from other disciplines into your work, and therefore help to better inform what's going on in other fields. Okay, Ilana Stonebreaker asking, what are authors from psychology, math, education besides management and economics? If we're looking at issues from outside the business school, that's kind of beyond the scope of what we're looking at. Certainly those folks would be more than welcome if they're looking to examine a BME type of work. Kind of looking for where they're at. Kind of like James Sullivan's question about the replication crisis in other fields. I remember somebody saying, well, how they go about giving presentations is they give very minimalistic stuff in their paper presentations to avoid the chance of being scooped, to which my reaction is, boy, I wish we had that problem with BME. There's not presently a journal for replication studies, but I hope we get to the point where we could use one. Joel Morse asking, isn't this area plagued by very small samples? To which my reaction is, well, it can be, but it certainly doesn't have to be. And one of the things, well, that I kind of hope for my work that we brought in is the idea of multi-class studies. Okay. Mahatantawi asks, how do you think we can better market BME to move it forward? Do you think this move forward, we need to correlate interdisciplinary efforts between scholars in the education and the management field? As far as for initial aspect, just the idea of being able to build a narrative for external stakeholders and showing that this type of work has value. On the second aspect of it, I remember back in my editor days, my opening from the editor, essentially opening from the editor column, it talked about, well, both bringing the classroom, education as classroom, into the realm, but also had wanted to see education into research. One of the things that I had hoped that we would see us as an area of study draw more extensively on educational research literature. I am someone who spent the previous decade running around with educational researchers and doing things like going to the annual AERA meetings, and that there are a number of barriers, in addition to the fact that folks are busy, that may be something on down the road. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of folks. George Hervnak at Bond University jumps out as an immediate exception to this, of people in business schools who have a background from an ed school. And so this is probably going to have to be something come in with us, at least to start out. Okay, Sharon Williams Ron Roy asks, are there any mechanisms for scholars in other areas to reach out to BME scholars and discuss collaborative research opportunities? I'm a mid-career scholar in instructional design and technology and would like to connect with both domestic and international BME scholars. And my own response was, oh, where were you 10, 15 years ago? Yeah, we actually, I remember one year, it's probably about 12 years ago. Ken Brown Kurt Krager and I actually proposed a special issue for AMLE, which focused on trying to generate that kind of a dialogue. I know it's one of my own personal frustrations as far as in this realm is, why don't we see more training and development scholars involved in BME research? It seems like a relatively, well, comparatively easy jump compared to some areas, and that it just hasn't been for there. Kalina Maranova asks, I entered my PhD holding a profound interest in academic writing and how management students kind of perceive the academic prose. Do you think that through turning the lenses on our own very own students, we can enrich and further develop our understanding of BME? I certainly think it wouldn't hurt. It's one of the things that's kind of about that, it suggests that what you're proposing will be something more employing qualitative research methodologies. And it's one of the things that's a challenge is that, just like in the disciplines, finding people who are able to do good qualitative work can be hard to do. And so folks that are willing to take up the challenge, you're all for it.
Ben, I really want to thank you. I think you've not only been very generous with your time, I think you've given us a really great insights and inspired more scholarship around here, at least. And I'm sure with the audience, I really appreciate everybody attending. I know that we've got people on this call from just about every continent.
Yep.
And so I appreciate your commitment to these. And again, I want to thank MED for sponsoring these. So thank you very much. And we will send you the link to the recording so that you can reflect back on this. Okay? Thank you.
All right. I'll make sure to send you the slides.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. That'll be on the link. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Right, Miguel.
Thank you.
All right, so once again, thank you so much for everyone that made this possible. We had over 120 participants. We had a peak of almost 100 people logged in. I know there's also, this was being broadcast live to some classes. So Ben, you are world famous now. Not that you were not before, but thank you so much. We really appreciate. And it's been a pleasure to actually make this link possible and make this very informative and interesting discussion about how can we improve our management education. All right, I'll see you next time. Thanks again for the Academy for providing all the support to make this possible. The recordings will be, as Murray said, online, and we go from there. Thanks, Ben. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.